Hello, and welcome back to another week of the DP World Tour Picks and Bets. Skylar Hoke here, joined by Tom Jacobs. Tom, we thought the end of our streak could happen anytime, but we show up here another Monday morning or Monday afternoon, and we have another winner in the books. A little first place finish for Jesper Svensson here out of nowhere. Third place for triple digit Sam Bairstow for you. Let's keep the good vibes rolling, Tom.
It's really good. Like, I mean, fortunately for me, I was asleep when Sam Bairstow was four clear after his 12th hole on Sunday. And when I woke up, the chance had already gone, really. But it was great that Svensson come flying through. And, the one person I felt for was Brad. I think he was on both Afi Barmer and Sam Bairstow yesterday. And then he was on Mackenzie Hughes as well over at the Valspar. So a little bit of a tough day for Brad, which is not usual for him. Normally he comes out the right side of those, so I won't feel too sorry for him, but it's a great run, right? I mean, these are the sort of things you build a foundation on, as we sort of said probably at the start of the year when Hoshino won in Qatar and then followed it straight up with Van Drill in Kenya. Like, if you can pick up those wins early, you know, you feel a lot better about the rest of the season. You're not second guessing yourself, you're not trying to go for, I mean, I don't necessarily do this, but I see a lot of people try and chase them by going for favourites a lot, or kind of going for, you know, ridiculously long odds to try and get a big win, you know, midway through the season. So the fact that you can just kind of then spend the rest of the year doing what you've been doing to start the season that's been so successful is really promising. So, lovely start. Yes, for Svensson, we've been very high on him, haven't we? And, you know, he's already had two runner-up finishes. He's now got the win, looked really good for it yesterday in the end. I know obviously he's come from behind, but you know, to beat Afi Barmer in a playoff is no small feat. I think he's a player that, you know, demands a lot of respect, and Svensson took him down. So really good tournament by all accounts. Hard to flow with the time zones, but I was impressed with how well we did and how well Bairstow did, really, at, you know, 100-1.
Yeah, I mean, Svensson, I've mentioned every single show or when we put him up, you were the one that kind of had a really good keen read on his Challenge Tour time. And, you know, we thought the course was going to fit spectacularly, and it really did. I mean, he dominated those par fives. He was 1,300 on the par fives, two better than anybody else in the field. I went to bed and he was 600 through eight, win equity of about 10%. And I was like, all right, you know, let's hope for a place here. And woke up and just kept scrolling. I mean, Barnrat, eagled the last to get into the playoffs. There's a chance Svensson could have just won in regulation. Good for him. Those are the crop of golfers. I mean, he's a little bit older, right, Jesper?
He's not like his, I think people
28.
He's approaching his 30s. It's not like he's a, you know, a spring chicken. But I think him and Cassard are the similar sort of players. And going back to last week when I sort of said the reason I didn't go to Svensson was because of Cassard being a bigger prize. Cassard was fourth after round one. He just kind of fell away. He had a really bad second round and played okay Saturday and into a Sunday. But it just goes to show that it does take some players a little bit longer. And look, if you think about probably the 2 years those Challenge Tour guys, you know, one was on the periphery of the Challenge Tour and DP World Tour, lost during COVID, right? Maybe we saw this from Jesper Svensson when he was 26, 10 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just happens to be, so I think having that patience with players is really important. And really, Svensson's shown no real signs of needing patience. He's come straight out and hit the ball running. So, definitely a reminder of what can come up.
I'll be curious. He's 102nd in the world now. That kind of game at some of the major tests, like if he gets into a major, like those are the guys that I end up falling in love with. You know what I mean? That can bomb it. Like the Del Rey at LACC type of thing we did last year. I feel Svensson, I mean, what do we have? Pinehurst and Valhalla on those tests, like could be fun. Maybe not.
It's one of those ones where you think, okay, let's not get carried away and think he's going to win. But like, and that's not, obviously not what you're saying, I don't think, but like, there's no reason why he can't challenge a Norren for top Swede or finish top 40 or top, you know, even top 20, right? Like, we've seen players do that, first round leaders, things like that, where, you know, we've seen that from people like Del Rey. As you said, he was so good for at least one round last year. It doesn't take a lot, right? Like, I think Ollison finished sixth in the Masters. Dietrich's had some good PGAs, some good major finishes, right? So these can happen. It's just getting a read on him, and is he the sort of player that if he gets a PGA Tour opportunity anytime soon. He quickly jumped ship, and you know, you wonder whether they should just sort of stay put for a year. I mean, if he finishes in the top 10 of the rankings, he's going to go over. But yeah, good to see what happens in the future. I think he really lived up to the hype so far.
Yep, absolutely. So awesome stretch of golf for us. We have one more event before a little bit of a break, because we'll have the Masters. They've done a good job at but letting those top players, there's not as many this year that would make the start, but April 18th would be the next DP World Tour event. So we have the Hero Indian Open this week, back in action. 2023 brought us back to DLF, Golf and Country Club. We are there again in 24. One of the most unique courses, I would say, in the world, definitely that see professional golf. I always love the challenge. It really is something that, I mean, it's a spectacle when viewing kind of it, because you're literally on the verge of a quad bogey all the time. It feels like at this type of course, there's blow ups left and right, single digit winners, kind of just a finicky test in some ways that I look forward to every year.
Yeah. Like, I think if you shoot level par for a day, you feel pretty comfortable around there. And I know the score was 14 under to win last year, 9 under, 11 under, like, that you can't do that every round, but it's certainly sometimes where you can kind of get out with a sensible score. And I think Matt Wallace said exactly what you just said. I think he said every single hole feels like it could be a double bogey hole. You know, I think Stephen Gallagher actually made potentially a triple bogey or a quad bogey on his final round when he won at 9 under. You know, it's no walk in the park. And I was speaking to Brad earlier about whether we're going to go back to the well with Afib Armrahm. We sort of said, you know, the mental draining that would have come from the playoff and then to go into a test like this where, you know, if you make a double bogey, you could easily just eject and, you know, do one after the other and all of a sudden your round's done, right? So there is this kind of nature sky where, and it's going to reflect in my card 100%, where I think this kind of plodder that always gets seen as a negative, but actually round here, it could be great where you just, you know, can you get 2 under par each day and see where that puts you on Sunday? You know, it could be beneficial. So that's certainly the approach I'm taking. I don't think you can overpower it. Last year, we did see players kind of come to the fore from driving distance. So 3 of the top 5 last year were inside the top 10 for driving distance, but they were Marcel Siem, who was 5th, Yannick Paul, who was 9th, and Jorge Campillo, who was 7th. And they're not traditionally big hitters, right? Like they just hit it longer on that kind of tournament. And I think that's because of the force kind of layouts you get and things like that. Maybe that shows you that if you can be a little bit more aggressive here and do it in a controlled manner, you will benefit. But ultimately, 4 of the top 5 also ranked inside the top 13 for driving accuracy. 4 of the top 5 ranked inside the top 10 for greens and regulations as well. So it is an all-round test. I think you do need to putt well to keep you in the mix. I wouldn't want to be on someone that can't scramble, which might be funny when we come to one of my later picks. But I think it's just a really all-round test. It's going to be unfair at times. You're going to have to just get over it. And that's going to be the biggest factor, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be chaos. Never feel safe. I think as much of an overall tee to green test as it can be, iron's going to be a premium. Totally. In agreement. And I think a lot of the market or a lot of the tweets that I've seen so far this morning and throughout Monday are in agreement of what the top selection, at least on the top of the board, is right now. If you look at the outright odds, so you see leading the market, Rasmus Højgaard is quite clear. Everyone 12s to 14s, Lahiri's 18s to 20s, Jordan Smith 20 to 1, Ewan Ferguson's 18 to 22, Juuse Lauten, all are below 25 to 1. The one that we are both siding with, when I think of an absolute tee to green test, somebody whose game in the traditional DP World Tour sense was the best, you know, while his time on the DP World Tour was Bernd Wiesberger, right? We've seen him now come over in 3 events on the DP World Tour, and what has he done in all 3 of those events? Just been lights out. I guess all 4 of those events been lights out tee to green. You know, last week at Singapore, his irons were flashing with him. He was 16th there, 16th in Byron, 21st in Hero Dubai. It just seems like classic Bernd Wiesberger, this type of golf course that he can do. And if he just tee to greens it to death, I'm not even worried about the bad putter that he has.
I think as much as I said the putting will be important here, I think everyone's going to have the same sort of struggles, and it's going to be the people that get there regularly that are going to have the chance to win, right? And I echo basically everything you said. He was sixth in approach last week, 10th in tee to green. He's an eight-time tour winner, Sky, with three playoff losses as well. So can conceivably, you know, you give him an extra one, maybe, you know, one of those three is it's nine wins. He's played in a Ryder Cup. That's more than anybody else in this field has achieved. Like, I know there's Joost Nelson, Eduardo Molinari, and people like that, and some more veteran players that have played well. But he is, I think, unless I'm missing someone, the most winningest player in the field. And I think that will count for a lot on Sunday if it comes down to it, right? Like, obviously, the thing that people will point to is the fact that he went over to live. He'll also point to the fact that he's actually had injuries, though. And I think that's really important. And you look, you rattled off the performances there, 21st, 37th, 16th, and 16th. They're not finishes where you think, okay, he's definitely going to win next time, but it certainly points in the right direction, right? And to me, as a player that is showing trend in form with the ball striking added to it, I think we should really pay attention to Bernd Riesberger. He's 23rd here on debut. One and only time he played here was 12th at the halfway stage. So for me, considering you can't necessarily trust any of those guys that you reeled off there at the top of the odds board, and I think for me, Joost Nelson was the closest, and I think I've given up from him for a little while. Like, I can't look at someone like a Rasmus Højgaard and think, okay, he's played so well in contention, he never bogeys, because that's not the case. And, you know, I think he could definitely lose his head here. You know, Ferguson, I think maybe might be the next best solid shout. But, yeah, it's definitely Bernd Riesberger as well for me.
Yeah, and I think it's similar to the Paul Casey syndrome in the sense that everyone kind of looked at that strike rate last week. And Casey played well, right? You know, but his number... I mean, we're going to probably get on at 25s, 28s here. Looks like best price still. Probably below 20 by the tee off on Wednesday night, right? I think that's likely to occur. But I think 25s to 28s, I'm more than happy with. What I'm not happy with, Tom, is the fact that you let me bet Richard Mansell last week. It was case in point. You let me. You didn't stop me. We talked about exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah.
What did he do? He was the 36-hole leader, playing great. Before I had my dinner on Thursday night, or what was it, Saturday night? Yeah, when round three goes off, or Friday night, he was three over, four over through like six holes. He was like T40, Tom. Yeah. It was awful. You can't bet Richard Mansell.
It's funny because I kind of wanted to bet him this week.
No, of course we did. Everything's perfect.
And then I just thought back to last week. I thought back to the conversation where I said, you know, maybe we should forgive him, and we weren't right to. I think the point you make about just quickly going back to Riesberger, like the fact that he's going to be, you know, even if he settles at 20-25 to 1, that's almost double the price of what Casey was last week. And Casey had to beat Shane Lowry. I know Shane Lowry didn't turn up, but like that, you know, I don't think we've got a Shane Lowry in his field.
And the world beater Matthew Pavon.
Exactly that, who continues to play well, right? And I think that's going to come into one of the later conversations. But yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, look, Richard Mansell, I don't know what else to say. I'll take it on the chin and take the blame. But we'll equal it out by the fact I pointed you into Vandrill to win the Kenya Open. So.
Yeah, man, I just couldn't do it with Mansell ever again. In that mid-range, I mean, Soderberg makes sense if you look at what he's been doing, tee to green, right? It's just been phenomenal. Yannick Paul was somebody I was super keen on last year going into this event, played really, really well. Hasn't had that same type of form at all. It was terrible in Singapore last week. Alex Fitzpatrick, you can make an argument there. You brought up a good point with, do you go back to Afi Barnrat? I'm skipping most of the mid range. We're down a decent bit further. Is there anybody here that you thought was intriguing?
I was very tempted to go back to Afi Barnrat. I don't necessarily know how you rule out Sam Bairstow, considering how consistent he's been this season. It's now getting to a number where you have to factor in whether you think he can win or not. And based on last week, the suggestion is probably no. Fitz is always going to get kind of following just by his name value, I think, and the fact he played so well in his rookie season. I don't see it. Not really, because I think that a lot of these players come into that realm of quite volatile, and I don't think that's what we need here. So I think actually the boring names that people don't want to bet are actually the people that we should be considering this week, and that's where you get the bit of value.
Yeah, 100%. I think I guess I would say we scream boring with a winner in which we've hit, I'll just go right into there. I mean, you kind of maybe once again do the double take for Darius Vandreel, right? He's as low as 66s in the States. If you don't want the each ways, you can find him 810-1 if you want to bet a separate top five, which is still 18s, one of the best values on the board for somebody. When you show up at a course, what did we want at Kenya? We wanted someone who's going to play from the fairway, someone who's going to be safe, someone who's going to just take it easy and know we're going to be on the greens, we're going to be in the fairways, and we're going to hopefully putt well. After competing at courses that didn't make sense, or I guess even missing cut in Qatar, and of course it didn't make sense, Singapore to me wasn't necessarily the course that should have fit well for Vandreel, who played 21st, you know, or finished 21st overall, steady off four rounds. Just the price, man. What else do you have to say on Vandreel?
Yeah, look, I just think it's, if we're right and it is just going to be this kind of plodding test, then Vandreel perfectly suits that. You referenced Kenya, obviously the win. 18th in strokes gained tee screen last week, 6th in approach, 8th in approach overall. So ball striking was great last week. And as you said, you wouldn't necessarily expect him to do that at Singapore. So 8th in approach, 18th tee screen is a really good sign. And the course is a lot longer and maybe not in his kind of wheelhouse. Hasn't played here, which, you know, that's one thing you would necessarily hold against him, but that's the only thing I can see as a negative, is like, I don't know whether he's good here or not. The suggestion is he should be, and that's what I'm going to go with. I think he's been really comfortable. I think he's dealt pretty well with being a winner. I know he obviously finished 74th in the Johnson Workwear, but again, he was 20th after round one, 33rd after round two. He's finished 21st since then, and look, even last week, 72 opening round was his worst round. I think he's just really, there's a floor, I think, to Vandreel that's pretty steady. And yeah, I think, you know, going wire to wire in the Kenya Open is a great sign. And yeah, I think he's overpriced, especially if you just take that kind of win equity and just back him in the basis of, I think he's too big, you know, because I think most of it is, I think he's disrespected in the market. And I think he's just being disrespected because he's already won. So if I'm protecting myself against that, I can afford to take that 110 on the fact that he just might go and win it again.
Yep, absolutely. I brought him up because I think your next golfer, let's see, is right around the same price. I'm going kind of deep from here on, Tom. So you don't want to go into Simon Forsstrom for us?
Yeah, Forsstrom is someone, Brad really likes Simon Forsstrom. He talks about him a lot. And look, I just think he feels very much like Darius Vandreel. It's a good kind of segue, right? Like, I think it's almost the same golfer. There's a certain amount of events a year where you think they can actually win. This happens to be one of them. He was 8th here on debut last year. He shot 67 on Sunday, which was one of the best rounds. It wasn't the best round, but the Sadau Open doesn't let you go and just absolutely bomb it. He won there last May, 17 under par. And look, we consider that a tough test, and he still shot 17 under. Again, we consider this Indian Open to be a tough test, but he could get to kind of 12, 14 under. And I think that's just right in his wheelhouse. And there's going to be certain events that he just can't compete at. It's as simple as that. He's just not long enough. But I think this is one that he can. And four rounds of level par or better here last year. I haven't done the maths of how many people did that, but he must be one of a very few amount of people last year that did that. And, you know, as much as one of them was, you know, a level par round, the fact that he did so well on that Sunday is really promising for me. So he hasn't, you know, lit the world alight in 2024, but I think it's been fine. Like, I think it's, again, you've just got to factor in where can he play well. And a little bit like Vandreel last week, is 29th at the Singapore Classic, a really good, you know, performance for him. 9th after round one and two, 18th still going into the final round, finishes 29th. 27 for the Qatar Masters, again, potentially not the most suitable golf course. And yeah, I think he's just outperforming what he should be doing at those golf courses. Now he comes to one that was, you know, perfectly suited to him. I think the price could look big.
Yeah.
110-1 he is.
Yep, 110s. Yeah, form's a little bit trickling this year, but if you can nail the spot, totally. I mean, I guess the conversation, it to me, we brought up Kenya, we brought up Sudal, which, if I'm correct, that's the Belgian event. Yeah. Is that right? Right. Who won at both those courses? Guido.
Yeah.
He tick any boxes for you? Because, I mean, last week was the first time we've seen him in a decent bit. I mean, he was steady 31st, 15th, 18th, 16th after every round. TD Green was pretty good overall. I used to, you know, build up Guido for spots that were going to be super difficult. Like, that's where I feel like he thrived in. Kenya, he was not very good at. But I was quite close to going into Guido.
Yeah, I just... It's weird because he has done so well, especially in France, you know, recently of those tough golf courses. He just still feels like to me like he's a bit volatile. I like him when he's kind of got, you know, places to make shots, but actually when it's super tough, I can't imagine him being comfortable making a double bogey and just reacting really well to it. So that's my kind of negative on it. Almost like too stylish to win the Indian Open.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been bad. It's been better, you know, like he's starting to catch a little bit, but trying to look through anybody else kind of in that mid range. That
what's the number that you've got on Schwab?
70. So yeah, I did skip over him in the range. Let's go into Schwab. Yep.
Let's go back to Matthias Schwab then. So look, he hasn't the issue with Schwab, and look, he's 71. I think that looks good value, right? The one thing people will argue, he's not won any tour yet. Like, he hasn't won the DP World Tour or the PGA Tour. He's been playing on both. But I think you've got to kind of look again. I think there's going to be a decent case study if someone wants to do it of what players were doing before that COVID break, what happened since, especially the ones that had to kind of go across two tours, right? And Matthias Schwab was someone that was kind of splitting his time. So I think there's a great deal of improvement ahead for Matthias Schwab. And when you look at 2019, before he kind of departed, he finished inside the top 10 nine times that year. Two of them runner-up finishes, four more top fives. One of those came in WGC. Another one came in Turkish Airlines Open. He lost in the playoff. Like, he was a really, really solid player. And if he can get back to what that is, then there's no doubt in my mind that he will win at this level at some point. I'm not necessarily going to go on and do massive things in the game of golf, but certainly on this tour. And you look at his recent events, four straight made cuts now, 23rd in Kenya, where he was 15th going in Sunday, 35th in South Africa, where he was 16th going in Sunday. And he was 43rd last week, Sky, but he was right there. I think he was 5th going into the final round. And I think you can just see that he's probably pushed too hard. He's probably tried to do what Svensson did and isn't quite capable of driving in that manner, right? He just tried to push for the win. And I kind of, you know, admire that in some respects. And when you look at his course finishes here, fourth on debut in 2018 and 18th 2019. He was sixth going into that final round in 2019 as well. So everything about Matthias Schwab, again, he just fits perfectly in that probably a little bit more of an evolved version of Forsström and Van Driel, in the sense I think both of them, they all kind of have their difficulties of driving it out, you know, far away, right? But I think he fits the mold. The one concern, this goes back to the comment I made earlier, his scrambling is not good. His around the green game is not good. If that becomes a factor going into Sunday, I'd be a little bit concerned. But yeah, for the most part, I think he's going to hit enough greens and fairways that it shouldn't matter too much.
I mean, the old Matthias Schwab would just rip this place up, man. It was perfect. It's tailor-made for him. I mean, we went in together, right, or talked, or I guess Pat was the one that tailed it that week, where definitely saw those signs of Schwab returning. So definitely can see that. I've counted down the literal seconds, Tom, until I got to bet this golfer again. And I'm going to keep doing it because at this point, the way that the reshuffle is going and the status is going, I just never confident when Nicolò Galletti is going to get any more starts. Like, these guys have to basically win to lock up what they're going to play next. I feel like that's got to be part of it. I mean, maybe they've settled in a little bit more once we get back in Korea and there'll be weaker fields. Maybe we'll get that stretch that they're playing. But what did Galletti do the last time out, right? He finished 11th with a really strong weekend. And I keep good tabs here on the mini tours. And Galletti picked up a win in the Asher Tour in between out in California. So that's a, you know, one of probably the better mini tours right now in the States. A lot of those guys went, at least the top guys went and started to play on the Americas Tour, which is the new Latino America McKenzie Tour combined down there. So some pretty good pro guys that were playing, and they're like Flavin and Bling, who were both like sub 30s in odds board for that first event on the Americas tour. So Gallaudet would be the favorite, probably, in my opinion, on that tour or close to it, the way he's playing. We're getting him 150s here after what he did. And again, we don't have the biggest stat repertoire for him, but what I trust the most is the PGA Tour stats. And again, I scanned through the field, Tom. He has to be the only golfer in this field with a made cut in 2024 on the PGA Tour, right? I think he is. So, and remember, at Waste Management, he led the field in accuracy. So I feel like Gallaudet should fit well here from his game style and just the talent he has. I'm going to go back into the well.
Yeah, me and Brad had a little friendly exchange earlier. We were convinced you were going to pick Gallaudet this week, and it wasn't a difficult decision, right? Like, we knew that was going to happen. Look, it comes with merit, right? Like, I think we spoke about this before. It's not like you just like a guy and you're just picking him. Like, 11th last time out in Kenya, it seems like a pretty good crossover event in terms of, not maybe just the similar course, but just in terms of difficulty, right? Like, I think it's the one way to look at it. You've mentioned there about the accuracy at the Phoenix Open. That's going to be important. I thought you might go with James Nicholas as well, but I don't know if anyone wants that one. But it's good to have them both in the field. Yeah, I think anytime you can find a reason to play someone at triple digits, it's worth doing. It's very much as simple as that.
I mean, I think three more now, Tom. So we've got
you wrap through them, and I'll just nod my head.
Yes, I mean, so it is good to see Joe Dean also. If you remember, Dean was the one who finished second. He tried to chase down Darius Van Driel. Dean's getting another start. That story I sent you or somebody had posted, right? He was delivery driving, right? Yeah. In between, or like popping over to do some work. Like, I mean, it's tough sledding when it comes to that. So these guys need it. Okay. I'm going to give the shout out to the audio listeners at this point, Tom, before I take a deep breath
and
we can rib through it. So you can find us Daily Fantasy Sports Picks and Bets, The Mix, available on all different podcast platforms. We appreciate the love, on YouTube and the comments, Twitter. You can find me at Skyhook DFS, Tom at Tom Jacobs 93. It's been fun ride so far in 2024, and your support, you know, goes a really long way in keeping us going here on the Mayo Media Network. So super thankful for the way things have been running and all the love that we get. All right. I guess there's a couple more that, well, I guess he's now.
Sorry, I think like, just before you go into that, like, I reckon we're quite modest, I think. So pretty underselling the kind of run that we're actually on here. Like, so last five events, we've had three winners, and the 2 weeks we didn't have winners, we had Robin Williams, you had at 150-1. He lost in a playoff. Rovetto was third at 100-1, and Brown was sixth at 66-1. He was actually the 54-hole leader. And then you had Ivan Quintero. Our worst week was when you had Ivan Quintero sixth at 150-1 each way, like in the last five. So, and even last week, I only tweeted out that Svensson won at 70-1. We had best at 100-1 in third as well. So not to just sit there and toot our own horn, but it is really important to point out when it is going well, and, you know, people will jump straight back on when it's not going so well, or let us know when things have been on a bad run. So it's important to enjoy it while we can. I think, as I said earlier, it's really important to, for the psyche of making the picks going forward, and to trust yourself and the judgment. So really enjoying the run, and hopefully that whether you're an audio listener or a video listener or a watcher, you've enjoyed those picks.
Yes. No. Good time to recap that, because it's true. It's been a really good run. Probably the best run we've had in four years of doing this. You know, like it's a stretch of golf that obviously at some point it's not going to continue, but like our research hasn't changed, right? It's just, does the dice, you know, show what you need when you roll them out there. So a couple that caught my eye that I didn't land on. I think DLF requires, or at least because of the finicky, I do love course experience here versus many others. And we get a combined event, right? Where we're going to have a good amount of PGA Tour of India golfers who also been warming up with Challenge Tour events too. So kind of a good recipe, I feel like, for some of these guys to be able to run up the leaderboard. That's kind of why I land there. But golfers, either on the DP World Tour or others that kind of jumped to me, you mentioned him last week, and I would have kicked myself if he won. Freddie Scott has been on a really, really good run. This course doesn't seem very good for him at all. He somehow led the field in greens in regulation, though, last week, and he was super long, but his approach was terrible.
Yeah, so that I'm wondering whether, because he was really close to me. Like I said to you before we come on about the fact that I've picked four of the shortest golfers on the VP World Tour, and I'm slightly worried that I've pigeonholed him in that respect. And I think if I was to add someone purely based on distance, I think it would have to be Scott. Like, I think when you look at his form this season, you know, 37th at the Ras Al Khaimah, but he was fourth after round one, seventh after round two. He was 56th in Kenya, but again, final round 68, second round 69 on a good golf course there. 11th for the Johnson Workwear, 64 and 65 there. And then 16th last week, where he was a 36-hole leader and just really one really bad round. I think he's too volatile for this golf course. I think that's pretty much what you're saying there, that he's not a great fit. But clearly rounding into some competitive form, and, you know, maybe when it opens up again, you know, and he can just unleash driver at will, then that's probably when we should be betting Freddie Scott. But if you need...
It's hard. To stop, but it's so hard when we say that, because he's not going to tee it up for another 6 weeks, basically, or 4 weeks. It's like, it's terrible.
And that's why, like, I actually admire these players that are coming back and, you know, missing 3 or 4 weeks and just picking up where they left off, right? Like, I think Svensson did it. I think Cassar did it to a certain extent. Like, the players that are just having these breaks, and that's one of the things with, like, Wiesberg. I mean, he played last week, finished 16th after, 5 weeks off? It's not a friend. I mean, I know they've had a couple of, you know, opportunities to play in between that they haven't taken, but not every course is going to suit you the best, right? And you have to be smart with your schedule and not just keep playing yourself into missed cuts and things like that. And I mean, Mansell 5 weeks off before finishing 11th last week. It's tough. And that would be one reason for Scott, is just like, strike while the iron's hot, and maybe you can just overcome that kind of, it might even just be a stigma from us that, like, he's just a long hitter, so we shouldn't play him. Like, in the form he's in, he'd probably win wherever or contend.
Yeah. I mean, missed cut the last night. And wasn't he the winner of Q School too, right? Like, he's had just such a good stretch. Him, the other golfer who's a little bit lower than where I landed, Kazuma Kabori, coming over from the PGA Tour of Australasia, where he is the Order of Merit winner, which, if I am correct, Tom, he's going to have a full status card next year on the DP World Tour.
So he's going to get what Micheluzzi.
He's going to get what Micheluzzi has gotten, which is, again, terrible in the sense that he's got to wait 9 months to be able to do that and capitalize on it when he won 3 out of 4 starts, pretty much once turning pro. He missed his only 2 cuts on the DP World Tour that he's played. That kind of gives me a little bit of hesitation showing up here for it. I liked golfers that you mentioned, I guess, pre-show. Somebody, what's it? It's Rahil Ganji, right? Ganji has been somebody who, in which 46 years old, has been kind of a lifetime PGA Tour of India golfer. Now, he finished second on the Challenge Tour last week, 22nd the week before, 3rd and 2nd prior to that. Opened at 1,000s at a book in the States, got immediately cut. I think it was a mistake. Should be around the hundreds, which makes sense there. But if I am correct, Ganji's best performance was not at the DP World Tour, right? It was on the PGA Tour of India one.
That was the pause. The fact that you look into him more, and he's 46, and he's been a career kind of PGA Tour of India golfer, never actually really even stepped up to the Challenge Tour level, right? And actually, he's played here 4 times, and one of them was in the Indian Open event, and he shot 76-81, and then he's played here on the PGA Tour of India 2nd, 32nd, and 22nd. Now, what's weird about that, Sky, is, like, it's all professional golf, right? So suddenly to go so bad and to shoot the kind of number, the numbers that he shot on his debut in the DP World Tour of 76-81, was he just out of form? You know, it doesn't sound realistic that that's the sort of scores he would shoot even at a higher level, right? It's not like it's extended 500 yards or something like that. So I would be tempted by Ganji if it came up.
Yeah. For me, there was 2 golfers specifically that thrived at the DP World Tour Hero Indian Open and then have flashed form going into this year's event. First one being Veer Alawat. So Veer, I saw Brad and Michael both put him up too. If you go on the DP World Tour site, players list their home course. Veer is one of two golfers who list this course as his home course. Veer finished fifth last week at the Challenge Tour event, so a little bit trending for him. He was 13th in the dual event, which you'd probably say is his best career performance when you look at where he's basically played. Last year he also was seventh in an Asian Tour event, ninth in another, 11th in a Challenge Tour event too. So some pops, but he was fourth going into the final round last year, and hadn't even really been showing much form heading into the event. So Veer, last I checked, we can find him. He's 300-1 at a book here. He's 100 with the each way, 200 at 365 if you want five spots. So I think 300 for Veer. Going back that route is one for me, Veer Ahlawat, Ahlawat. And then the other golfer who played incredibly well in the Hero Indian Open too, at the halfway point, he was second after 54 holes. He was seventh. Sunday didn't go his way, but Engad Cheema, Cheema. So Engad was right in the mix. And then if you look at his lead-in form, 8th, 36th, 3rd, 14th, his last four events. So finished 20th there. Those two guys, they were the clear standouts when it came to PGA Tour of India players last year at this event. And then coming into now this year with form, it isn't the SSP Chaurasia kind of form or what we've talked about, but you made a good point in saying he did have at least a bunch of DP World Tour success and led in when he dominated at this event. So these guys have the best performance that they could have put on basically without, basically placing last year and still get some deep numbers.
Yeah, 100%. And just to clarify, those rounds I read out there for Ganji were actually Manu Gandas's finishes here. There's actually the next person down. So actually Ganji, it's still a pretty similar story. He missed the cut. He shot 72-84 here in the Indian Open. And then the next time he did play this Indian Open, he shot 77-80 over the weekend when he did make the cut. So similar sort of story, but not the picture I was completely painting. So Manu Gandas might be the one that, someone you mentioned a lot.
That's the next one that I wanted to get to. So I was going to say, I remember like I was waiting to bet Galetti this type of week. I couldn't wait to bet Manu Gandas for this event last year. He had finally made his first cut on the DP World Tour event the week before, and then he made it. I think he finished 20th or maybe 22nd last year. He probably opened 300s, 400s. I was betting him deep into it. He was doing the Guksin Chen. He was doing the Kaburi. He was doing that recipe of racking up wins on the tour. Now with DLF experience, he's got a second place here as well on the PGA Tour of India too. And we're getting a number on Gandas. His form isn't as good as the other two guys, but his pedigree is much stronger. I say form isn't as good. He's 26, missed cut 5th, 13th, and then he did win 6 weeks ago on the PGA Tour of India. And last I saw, Gandas, if we look at the numbers here, Gandas 300 is the deepest number we have here in the States. So I'm for sure going to bet him. Those are the three guys that I feel like coming over in the PGA Tour of India. I always shoot for the moon, think we can get a win, but top five, top 10 on those guys, I really, really like it this week.
Yeah, 32nd Gandas was at this event last year, and 22nd on the PGA Tour of India event that he'd finished second at the year before. So
yes, that's what it was.
But yeah, so he opened with a 70 here last year in this Indian Open event. He was 8th after round one, 18th after round two. And look, I think when you look at scores and they go 70, 73, 73, 74, you think it's a bad week, but that's not horrendous here. It's one thing you've got to really pay attention to is that anything 72 or better is really good around here, and then you kind of expect a kind of 73, 74 from more different types of players. So the fact that it was Gandas is a young age is absolutely fine. So yeah, a lot of information to digest there with the Indian guys, but hopefully there's some names there for people to pick up from.
Totally agree. I think basically I'm just not uber confident in the top or mid range. I got four selections that are triple digits. It's not a surprise the way I bet often on this tour, but I'm excited to kind of roll up with those guys. Anybody else to roll through, or are you cool with reviewing betting cards?
I think that's probably it. I think if I did look at Angel Hidalgo, someone that I kind of mentioned a couple of weeks ago, play well. He's kind of up there in a couple of key categories for me. I couldn't get there. I think Hugo Cassar's going to get forgotten about quite quickly and probably shouldn't do.
He's the same thing with Scott in the sense that I don't think it's a good course fit, but man, I mean, he's got so many bogeys, but he birdied so many holes. He should have finished better than he did last week.
100%. And the other one, Sky, and this is always the argument of, is it just because of where they've been playing, but Daniel Van Tonder's in some really good form.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's playing really strongly. 10th, 27th, 20th, 9th, 7th. And, of course, it suits him. They've played the DP World Tour in South Africa, and then he's gone back to the Sunshine Tour when he's not been playing here. But, you know, he's played this golf course. He finished, I think, 56th here last year. It wasn't great, but he had a really bad final round. I could see him playing quite well.
He, when I think about like where he played the best of his life was that PGA Championship. That was incredibly hard. Maybe a hard test suits him. Ugo also won on the Challenge Tour in India too. Kusad did. He won one of those co-sanctioned events last year.
I didn't need much more encouragement to bet him. So that might be we'll review that as the week goes on. If I do it, then I'll tweet it out.
Yeah, the only other guy that I thought I saw, Prakash, he had won one of those events too. Prakash Chahoun, good. He was eighth last week. He just never kicked on after basically doing what Gondis did in 2022 on the PGA Tour of India. He did that in 2023, has some success here. I am passing, but I think we're ready to review. Man, I have 5 selections that are triple digits, Tom. This is fun.
This is good. This is a good week. Let me go through mine and then we can play out the big hitters. So Bernd Wiesberger, there's still a 30-1 at the moment, but it's probably gonna be like 25-1 by the time you listen to this. Matthias Schwab at 70-1, Simon Forsstrom 110-1, and Darius Vandril 130-1. Now with Forsstrom and Vandril, if you want places, you're looking at kind of like 66 and 80-1 respectively on those guys. But yeah, like them all.
Perfect. All right. So we align on those top two, right? We have Burned at 25 is now the best in the States. I'm still very okay with that. Vandriel's getting cut a little bit over here, but they're still without the places, 100-1. Galletti 150 with the 6 places. There's 220, 250s without it. I'll probably honestly end up betting a lot of separate guys this week because it looks like the each ways aren't the best over here in the States, at least for this week. Veer Alawat, he's 300-1 as long as, so Ahlawat, find him. Manu Gondis at 300-1 as well. And then wrapping up at the end is it's a super bomb, I guess we could say. Angad Chima is 750-1 this week. So that's just some really long shots that, at least from the context of what we like this week, I think that we get one, if not two of those guys in the top 10, that's still a winning week in that manner when you're betting this deep down the board. So a winner plus that, Tom, how about that?
Yeah, let's get a winner and a big bomb, right? Like I think that's the next stage, is to get one of these kind of big, that's probably our next evolution, guys, get one of your 750-1 winners through the post. That would be pretty exciting. But look, I think ultimately we're on alignment in terms of what we expect from the golf course. I like the picks that we've landed on. You're going to have to kind of take the hits with the Indians. That's not me. I think I'm just nodding and agreeing. But I think it's going to be a good week, and I'm looking forward to it. It should be a really good watch, if nothing else. So looking forward to it.
Yep, 100%. It's like we mentioned at the top, we have a gap in the schedule. I think April 18th is the next time the DP World Tour. So it's the week after the Masters. So it should be a 3-week break here for us, or 2-week break. But thank you, as always, Tom. Appreciate all your efforts that we go through with this. And let's keep the ball rolling.
Yes, get another winner.
Yep. Amen. Awesome. Good luck, everybody. We'll catch you soon. Thanks.